Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Melody Cederstrom, and I'm here with my co-host, Dave Allen, as we bring you our opinion and commentary on today's economic and political events for Tuesday, March 29th, 2022. Good day to you, Dave.
And back at you, Melody. And
yes.
Happy National Mom and Pop Business Owners Day.
Aw, isn't that nice?
It is. It is. Did you know that on this day in 1929... President Herbert Hoover had the first telephone installed in the Oval Office.
Mm.
Yes, and years later in 1970.
I don't know if that's good news or bad news.
Well, apparently the red phone isn't making its way to Moscow these days, but maybe there's a problem between AT&T, Verizon, and T-Mobile. But then in 1973, the last U.S. combat troops were said to have left South Vietnam 2 months after the signing of the Vietnam Peace Agreement.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, there you have it.
All right. Well, now that we have that, let's get to the precious metals. We had a great day in gold today. It's still down a couple bucks in the New York spot price after market. But we did have a low of 1889, and it popped. We're right now at 1921, so a pretty big reversal there. Saw the same kind of a day in silver, 2487 ending the day, or still trading in the New York spot price after market, but only down 14 cents. The low was 2393, so almost a whole buck turnaround there. Platinum from low to high. Platinum... still holding at 994. Palladium was down 92, 4.25%, 2,220. The USDX today, let's take a peek at that, was down 0.75 at 98.40. And let's go ahead and get to the market report. The Dow had a big day. I guess they're just on some sort of a winning streak here. The Dow was up not quite 1%, 338 points, 35,294. S&P was up 1.25%, up 56 points at 4,631. NASDAQ was up 264 points at 14,619. Asia, Shanghai was negative only by a few points. Europe was positive across the board. Bonds, 10-year yield, 2.38%. That dropped somewhat from their high recently. And again, we saw oil holding at 105. Brent is 111. Both of them were in the negative territories for the day. So I'm not sure... what's really, I think, Dave, it's just a lot of pressure off from, everybody thinks that there's going to be some peace talks that are going to come out of this and so forth and whatnot. So there might be, and I think we've seen some pressure. But then I think all the real news, you know, things that have been going on other than just this Russia-Ukraine deal, inflation and everything else is beginning to, that's still around. That's not transitory. Like we were told, it's still here. Well, we better start paying attention to this. Boy, have you been to the store lately? And so that might be taken over here soon instead of this war in Ukraine. And I think you're going to talk about the budget. We touched briefly on it yesterday when it came out. And it's so diluted. And the thing of it is, Dave, that's not even... most likely it won't even be passed, and there'll be so many changes to it and so forth before all is said and done, before all the politicians get in there and get their little, you know, backdoor deals done and so forth on just like everything else that they do. So it'll be interesting to see what some of the changes will be. And but you're going to be talking about that in the third segment of the program today. And, you know, and it's so distorted, you know, just like they're cutting back. Oh, we're going to cut back the debt by trillions of dollars. Really? cut me a break.
Now it's just $1 trillion.
Oh, now it's just $1 trillion. Cut me a break. You know, well, it was more. So now if it's just a trillion, that means they're planning on, you know, dishing out more stimulus out there to keep the economy and people happy. You know, I mean, it's just ridiculous. Just like the, oh, we're going to give all the police, we're going to fund the police. No, most of that money's going to the ATF and other areas and gun control and things like that. Yes, there's money going to, you know, fund the police. But in the scheme of things, very little. So it's just the same. It's politics as usual. And also the same way when we talk about Ukraine and Russia. Ukraine is seeking a ceasefire in talks today in Turkey, hoping to improve in the humanitarian situation. Ukraine's military recaptured from Russia troops the town of Irpin. That's west of the capital. This is according to Zelensky today. And again, I don't know, Dave, do we believe everything? I don't know. Meanwhile, Russia's deputy defense minister claimed Moscow has decided to drastically cut back its military activity near that capital. Alexander Fomin, who spoke after negotiations in Istanbul, said Russia would slow its military operations near Kiev and Chernihiv in order for peace talks to progress. So that is a good sign if they continue. But I also heard the air advancement, or whatever you might call it, didn't cease. So I'm not quite sure how that all works, but they did say they would reduce the military. Secretary of State Anthony Blinken. So the U.S. has not seen any indications that ceasefire talks between the two are progressing. He's not seen anything that suggests this is moving forward. When he was asked about Russia's claim that it was going to reduce the military operations near the capital, Dave.
Well, alluding to what you just said, Blinken also said there is what Russia says and there is what Russia does. We are focused on the latter. So I think that's a good comeback to that, the question of, will the Russian military actually follow through? Russian forces have killed at least 1,200 civilians since it invaded Ukraine. That's figures according to the UN. It seems awfully low. At least an additional 1,900 civilians, Ukrainian civilians, have been injured, including close to 100 children. The majority of deaths recorded were caused by explosives with a wide impact area. That includes shelling from heavy artillery and airstrikes. And, of course, there having been the target of these airstrikes is what has been leading many across the world to refer to Putin as a war criminal. Interestingly, NATO allies are reportedly split on whether they should talk directly to Putin and what and how many further weapons to send to Ukraine. So the plot thickens somewhat today, but again, just looking at more and more pictures of these major cities across Ukraine, Melody, just shows the devastation that one person can cause if they're so inclined. I mean, it isn't just a punch in the cheek, as Chris Rock now knows.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think Russia's not totally dumb. They're beginning to resume its gold purchases from local banks yesterday, but it did set a fixed price on it. The Russian Central Bank will pay a fixed price of 5,000 rubles or $52 per gram between March 28th and June 30th. It is below the current market value in Russia of around 68. The Bank of Russia added that the resumption in buying will ensure supply and uninterrupted production of local gold. It was just 2 weeks ago that the central bank announced that it was halting gold purchases from banks because of a surge in demand from regular customers. And Russians, of course, who wouldn't go on a gold buying spree in March to protect their savings as the ruble began to collapse. And Russia's largest bank reported that demand for gold and palladium has quadrupled in the last few weeks. I think maybe it has slowed down because we've seen the price for palladium drop significantly. Meanwhile, Russian Ministry of Finance also referred to gold as an ideal alternative to the U.S. dollar. And, of course, we can remember when the U.S. Did the same thing during the good old gold standard years, setting a fixed price for gold. The period between 1879 and 1914 is also known as the classical gold standard era in our country. When gold represented about $21. And, of course, we all remember in 33 when FDR confiscated gold. So, Dave?
Yeah, that's interesting. Precious metal expert Everett Millman said it leads me to believe that Russia's intention would be for the value of the ruble to be linked directly to the value of gold. You think?
You think?
That's pretty important when it comes to how Russia could seek funding and manage its central bank financing outside of the U.S. dollar system. Millman added that gold is one of the most logical international currencies to use when you're trying to get around sanctions. Last week, we talked about the U.S. Treasury banned all gold transactions with the Russian central bank. Millman believes those types of sanctions could be effective to an extent anyway, saying that it can have a significant impact if for no other reason than to force other partners to shy away from doing transactions with Russia in gold. Now, in response to escalating sanctions from the West for Russia's invasion, Moscow said that unfriendly countries could be required to pay for Russian gas in rubles. Foreign gold. Russia is also considering accepting Bitcoin for its oil and gas exports and being more flexible in general regarding payment options, but only with so-called friendly buddy countries. One Russian finance official said, "We've been proposing to China for a long time to switch to settlements in national currencies for rubles and yuan. With Turkey, it'll be lira and rubles. You can also trade bitcoins." Well, good for them, Melody, right?
Well, you know, it was China, though. I read where their gold was priced in yuans.
Yes.
So I'm not quite sure how all that is associated. I'm sure a lot of that has an impact on why we've seen pressure on gold and also why we've seen a big turnaround today also. So, but again, just remember long term, ladies and gentlemen, this is we don't know where this is headed. And you know what? They still have a early April debt payment they have and one in May. So perhaps I think it's early April, isn't it? April.
It is.
April 5th or something like that?
Yeah, between the 4th and 6th, I think.
Yeah,
hey,
so.
That would be the 5th.
Yeah. Hey! Golly! So, I mean, this they could be, you know, beginning to set up so they do have the funds to make those debt payments as, you know, they're planning for it. So, so we'll have to see what how this all pays out. You know, they're the group of seven said, no, I don't think we'll do it. All G7 ministers agreed completely that this would be a one-sided and clear breach of the existing contracts for natural gas. And the energy ministers of both, well, of all, France, Germany, Italy, Japan, the U.S., the U.K., Canada, even the EU energy commissioner, they all met by video conference and reaffirmed that contracts must be respected, with most stipulating payments to be in euros or dollars. Hey, Well, IBAR rate, hey, though all those contracts, they were all null and void, and what'd they do? So, you know what? Contracts only mean anything to these guys when it benefits them. And, you know, so it kind of cracks me up that contracts must be respected. Okay. Payments in ruble is not acceptable, and we will urge the companies affected now not to follow the demand by Putin.
Yeah, I don't have anything to add to that, Melody.
Okay. Now, we've talked about this before with the yield on the 10-year treasury is now higher than 2-year bonds. Worse, it's in danger of turning negative, which many observers believe and history shows is a sign of an impending recession. We talked about this, what, was it 2 years ago?
Yeah.
Dave?
Yeah.
But, of course, everyone is saying, don't panic. The indicator may be sending a false alarm this time. Meanwhile, the yen, which slumped to its weakest level in almost 7 years yesterday, seems to have gotten a reprieve. That comes after Japan's chief currency official discussed exchange rates. Possible sign that the policymakers are starting to sit up and take notice. These warping yield curves, man, they are becoming more pronounced. And the implications become more confusing. Skyrocketing prices have turned the Federal Reserve into inflation fighters, while geopolitics is pressuring longer-term GDP forecasts. So you have these investors are digesting so much that markets are getting agitated, making it harder to cleanly decipher the yield curve's messages. Well, let's put everything else in there together, what's going on in this nation, and we can pretty much tell you what the message is. It's real. It's not fake.
Mm-hmm.
Difference between the 2-year treasury and its 10-year counterpart narrow to its smallest since February of 2020. Oh, remember, Dave, that recession only lasted, what, a month?
Yeah, I know. Yes.
It's such a joke. And the differential between 5-year notes and 30-year bonds actually inverted, which is when it costs the government more to borrow for the shorter term, in this case 5 years, than for the longer term, Dave.
Well, and it's the first time the 5 and 30-year have inverted since 2006.
Yeah.
So Peter Buchvar, Bleakley Advisory, contends that an economic soft landing is wishful thinking, given the surging inflation and the supply chains that are still dysfunctional. But the relationship between an inverted yield curve and a possible downturn, i.e. recession, comes with a lag of usually several months, if history's any judge. But these are different times, ladies and gentlemen. Nothing is certain. Protect yourself with plenty of gold and silver.
We'll be right back. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as common sense voices of integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSETalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at DGScoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And welcome back. You're listening to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Melody Cederstrom. 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Make sure you visit our website at dgscoins.com. dgscoins.com. Make sure you sign up for our weekly newsletter and blog by Dave Allen. And so welcome back. And you know, after 2 years after the world shut down and closed everything up, signs of a slow motion crack up in office real estate is emerging. And I think we talked about this probably a long time ago, and now they're beginning to write about it. Fresh commercial real estate data suggests that working from home is becoming a permanent feature of the American economy. Keep everybody home. And it's a development that has major implications for everything from housing prices to transportation policy to municipal finance. Vacancy rates continue to climb in major markets across the country, and signs of distress in loans backed by office buildings also appear to be growing. Some too-big-to-fail bank analysts noted last week that the share of office mortgages that have been assigned to either watch list of loans showing signs of being in trouble or special servicing, and that's where loans with missed payments are sent, has hit more than 21%. It's the highest since the financial crisis. So that's an indication that something not great might be starting to bubble up. I mean, we already know that there's things that aren't great that's already out there. This is just another sign. But this is one within the office sector. And, I mean, it doesn't take rocket scientists to figure this out. When nobody works anymore, wants to go in the office, you're going to have a lot of empty office space available, Dave.
You know, it's funny. Not too long ago, I ran into an old business acquaintance who owns a fairly large commercial real estate company in Philadelphia. And I asked him, you know, how the pandemic has been to him. And he said, oh, it's great. He said, everyone, I think he had like over 200 employees. I forget the exact number, but he said, it's great. Everyone's working from home. I'm saving $2,000, $3,000 a day on lunches. And here's a guy who literally paid for all of his employees' lunch every day as a condition for them not being able to eat out, to stay at the office and take calls. So that was an interesting twist I hadn't heard before. It's interesting what's going on here. Loads of people who started working from home during
the pandemic. What happened to the offices that they were in? He owned them?
He did. Yeah, he did own. He owned the company is housed in a fairly notable high rise in Southwest Philadelphia. They still own it. I don't know how he's handled the debt payments on it, but I know he's got a 30-acre home in one of the most exclusive neighborhoods in southeastern PA, so things can't have been too bad for him. Interestingly, I mean, overall, you have office vacancy rates have risen, 12.2% from 9.7 over just the past 2 years. Percentage-wise, it's a fairly substantial increase. And those numbers likely overstate how much the office space is actually being used. Recent data from Castle Systems, which measure occupancy by looking at foot traffic into offices, showed vacancies of about 60% in major markets. Now, the office real estate market won't collapse overnight, since a lot of the leases in commercial office space often lock tenants in for as long as 10 years. But these trends are certainly suggest that American office space is going to see significant change for years to come, Melody.
Well, you know, we did see a little bit of a cooling off in home prices, and now they seem to be back up again. Home prices nationally rose 19.2% year over year in January, up from 18.9% in December. But, of course, that was all before rates hit 5%. 10-city composite annual increase was 17.5%, up from 17.1% in the previous month. And, again, as usual, the biggest annual gains came from Phoenix, Tampa, Florida, Miami. 16 of the 20 cities reported higher price increases in the year ending in January 2022 versus the year ending in December 2021. So, and of course, you can also guess who had the smallest gains. Guess, Dave.
Who? Not our nation's capital.
Oh, no. Not Minneapolis. Not Chicago.
No. They were all up over double digits, right?
Yeah, sure.
Everything's relative.
Yes, it is. It is. So, and the and here, this was at that point in time, you know, the 30-year fix was 3.25%, but, you know, it's now at 5. So things changed quickly. It will make a difference.
No, it sure will. Yeah, Craig Lazara at S&P Dow Jones said we may soon begin to see the impact of increasing mortgage rates on home prices. And higher mortgage rates have already started to affect sales in the first few months of this year. Pending home sales have now fallen for 4 straight months. It's according to the National Association of Realtors. They said the monthly payment for a median-priced home has jumped 30% in the past year, far outpacing even fast-rising consumer prices, up overall 8% from a year ago, according to the government.
Well, you know, and again, things are just so weird out there. Nothing makes sense. When you have 4.35 million Americans just quit their job in February, while the gap between available positions and the unemployment grew even wider. And this came from the Bureau of Labor Statistics. They just reported that today. Job openings and labor turnover survey showed that an astounding 4.35 million workers left in February. And that's a short month. An increase of 94,000 from the previous month. And it's also slightly a higher level as a percentage of the workforce, up to 2.9% from 2.8%. Education and health services had the highest level of job openings for the month at 2.2 million, followed by professional and business services with 2.1. Dave, it just doesn't make sense.
Well, you know, There were 11.27 million job openings in the month, Melody. However, with total level of those counted as unemployed shrinking further to 6.27 million, now subtracting the two, that left a record 5 million more openings than available workers. Roughly 1.8 jobs for every unemployed person. So now this quits level, well, it was off from November's high of 4.5 million. Still very significant. And the highest level in this respect was in trade, transportation, and utilities at just a little over 1 million. Leisure and hospitality saw its quits rate unchanged at 5.6%. And that elevated level of quits is what are part of what, anyway, some term the Great Resignation, and where workers have been able to leave their current positions for better pay and benefits. So, I mean, aside from the mixed signals all these different reports continue to show, what it's telling me, anyway, is that, boy, this job mess, this crazy labor market is not out of the woods yet. Sure, you know, we're seeing job reports that are showing significant levels of hiring, but as Melody likes to point out, many, if not most of those quote new jobs have been the refilling of older jobs that, you know, that had been laid off, where workers been laid off. So we'll see another round of this misleading info this Friday, and another jobs report. They're expecting growth about 490,000, as well as an increase in average hourly earnings, 5.5% on an annualized basis.
Well, you know, I hear this a lot, this conversation I have every day with customers, and it's about government digital dollars, digital euros, central bank digital currencies. You hear, you know, Biden just signed an executive order to do research on digital currencies. And but we really don't know. It's not really clear what they're – well, I think I know what they're trying to do, but there's a lot of questions out there that give people a – you know, are they trying to give people a public payment option? Are they trying to give everyone an account at the Federal Reserve? It's supposed to be easier to send helicopter money right into your account.
Mm-hmm.
Is it because people are into crypto and blockchains these days and central banks have to get into the action?
Mm-hmm.
Personally, what I believe – as I believe our current system is no longer functions properly. And I think, you know, everybody talks about governments going to a digital currency. It's not going to be it won't be a fluid and simple process. It will happen after the damage has been done. So they're not going to do anything to benefit you. It will be to benefit the governments. And there's a lot of money sitting out there in retirement accounts, trillions and trillions of dollars. So to me, their interest in digital currencies, it's not for our benefit. There's a new proposal for some progressive House Democrats called the e-cash that envisions a digital dollar, and some analysts say that this one actually has a point, really. The point is to create a digital cash-like instrument that allows person A to send person B dollars over the Internet. Well, don't we do that already? You might think this, well, so except, and it's not like PayPal or Venmo. I mean, those are third parties. But this would be person to person, peer to peer. And you're not transferring cash, Dave. But that's what they want you to believe.
Well, yeah. Instead, you're transferring liabilities.
Digits. Nothing.
Know, some central entity. And the central entity stands in the middle with a record of who's paid for what and when. But they say that this E-Cash Act proposal aims to keep the true properties of cash privacy while preserving bearer assets. You know, in a fact FAQ about e-cash, the proposed legislation points to these supposed benefits. It's denominated in U.S. dollars. It's issued and guaranteed by the U.S. government.
There isn't anything guaranteed by the U.S. government.
It's available for retail use by the public. It's not reliant on a common ledger or any third payment processor. I think that's the main point. And it's capable of anonymous offline peer-to-peer transactions, sort of related to the prior one. So, look, I mean, cash isn't very hip these days, for lack of a better word. People worry about money laundering and tax evasion and other crimes, plus cash has carrying costs and all that. Still, people like cash. People still use cash and like being able to make transactions without them all going into some easily surveyable database. Plus, they say if cash were to go away, a lot of people are likely to miss it. Well, not everyone's going to support the public creation of a digital version of cash. But unlike many digital currency talks, again, these analysts saying this vision apparently has a real purpose. Again, what that is and whether it benefits us as opposed to the banks remains to be seen, Melody.
Yeah, yeah. Well, we're the government. We're here to help you transfer money from account to account. Yeah, that makes me feel comfortable and safe, all warm and fuzzy, you know. Oh, there won't be a database. Oh, no, there won't. Oh, we're not going to track. Oh, no.
And it's unhackable to boot.
Oh, sure. Oh, yes. Don't forget that. Can't be hacked.
Just like the Department of Defense database.
Yes, I know it. Oh, it's so pathetic out there. It really is. Well, you know, China's beginning another lockdown. We only got about 15 seconds left. The biggest one in 2 years. And it's Shanghai, China's financial capital and the largest city with 26 million people, had managed its smaller previous outbreaks with limited lockdowns of housing compounds. But the citywide lockdown that will be conducted in two phases. So here we go again. You can't lock Shanghai at that. So
let's hope they're not leading by example.
We'll be right back. Please stay tuned. You're listening to Financial Survival.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on shortwave radio. Visit discountgoldandsilvertrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSETalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading, 1-800-375-4188, or online at DGScoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together, working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
And one more time today, welcome back to Financial Survival. I'm Dave Allen. Melody's taking care of other business with clients. This final segment, call or toll free at 1-800-375-4188. Excuse my voice. First cold of the new year from my grandsons. Melody alluded to the new federal budget. Biden's proposed fiscal year 2023, $5.8 trillion budget released yesterday. Among other things, calling for more than $32 billion in new spending to fight crime, putting a price tag on his State of the Union address where he called for funding, not defunding, of the police. Biden wanting to show America he's addressing rising crime, which of course threatens Democratic or Democrats' fortunes in the midterm elections in November. Budget proposal includes $20.6 billion for the next fiscal year for Justice Department discretionary spending on federal law enforcement, crime prevention, and intervention. That's $2 billion more than the $18.6 billion enacted for the current fiscal year. Now, this expanded discretionary spending, they say, would increase resources for federal prosecutors to give additional resources to state and local law enforcement to put more police on the beat. It would more than double the funding for community policing through the COPS hiring program and would add $500 million for so-called community violence interventions. That's up from $50 million. As Melody said, it would pay for 140 ATF agents and investigators working on gun trafficking strike forces and 160 ATF investigators working on gun dealer compliance. Would significantly increase funds for law enforcement agencies to trace firearms found at crime scenes. Now, we hear the president's been trying to distance himself more recently from progressives over how to combat crime and to convince independent swing voters across the country that he understands their concerns about feeling unsafe. We'll see where that goes. Budget also includes billionaire tax to pay for $1 trillion in deficit reduction over a decade. New minimum tax on the wealthiest Americans would require households worth over $100 million to pay at least 20% of their income in taxes. Proposed budget also calls for hiking the top marginal individual income tax rate back to 39.6 from 37%. Now, these higher rates would apply to married couples filing jointly with taxable income over $450,000, heads of household above $425K, single filers making more than $400,000, and $225,000 for married taxpayers who file separately. If enacted, the change could hit higher earners beginning as early as next year, with income thresholds adjusting for inflation after 2023. However, I mean, increases to income tax rates may be difficult to pass, particularly in an election year, with previous pushbacks from Democratic Senator Kristen Sinema of Arizona, to name just one. Moreover, Democrats have a short window to reach any agreement on this and other provisions to pass a budget before midterm election campaigns begin ramping up around Labor Day. And that's, you know, for the general election in November. A number of them who are in tight races are out campaigning now for their primaries. So I'm not sure what's going to happen. Democrats still have to muster 50 votes in the Senate. Besides Sinema, you got Joe Manchin of West Virginia, who blocked the House version of Biden's Build Back Better proposal. I'm not sure if how willing he is to restart any semblance of those negotiations. Now, the Republican 2017 tax overhaul temporarily reduced the top marginal rate to 37% through December of 2025. However, it returns automatically to 39.6 when the provision sunsets in January 2026, unless extended by Congress. So, Congress doesn't have a strong track record when it comes to passing budgets. There haven't been very many passed in the last decade. Now, Graham Summers asks in the Gains, Pains, and Capital blog, do you feel that? His answer, I'm sure on some level you do. Something isn't right about this rally in stocks, he surmises. Something doesn't add up. In fact, something's very bad that's brewing in our financial system. Summers points out that stocks have erupted higher over the last week, rising 9%. However, beneath the surface, something truly incredible is happening. In fact, he says it's horrifying. He's talking about the bond market. He believes the media likes to focus on the stock market because, well, stocks are sexy and easily grab the public's attention. Besides, most of us has at least a little of our retirement savings invested there. So we have a stake. However, Summers says the reality is that the stock market is one of the smallest asset classes out there. Globally, the stock market's about $89 trillion these days, give or take. By way of comparison, global debt markets are worth over $281 trillion. And when you include derivatives that trade based on bond yields, that amount balloons up to over $750 trillion, which is why Summers warns the complete carnage occurring in bonds right now should terrify everyone. Across the board, bond prices are collapsing while bond yields skyrocket. And the yield in the five-year U.S. Treasury is up 100 basis points. That's one full percentage point this month alone. 100 basis points. So it rose over 20 basis points last week. The yield on the all-important 10-year U.S. Treasury, probably the most important bond in the world, is also exploding higher. It's almost up 75 basis points this month. Most of us don't follow the bond market well because it's just not as sexy as stocks. But you got to remember that our current financial system is debt-based. This dollar isn't backed by anything finite either, and U.S. Treasuries are the senior-most asset class owned by large financial institutions, not to mention mega banks, mutual funds, pension funds, and so forth. They're literally the bedrock of our current financial system. Summers says that bedrock is cracking in a big way. Imagine the impact it would have on a skyscraper if, well, the bedrock which supports the foundation began to crack. That's where we are with the financial system today, ladies and gentlemen. Protect yourself. Protect your family with plenty of gold and silver coins and bars for all your precious metal needs. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4100. 888. Our new American Survival newsletter hit the streets yesterday. I have an article called Despite Fed Rate Hike, Inflation Expectations Rise. Now, even though the Fed started hiking interest rates to rein in the inflation that's running at a four-decade high, consumers and investors think price rises will be tough to slow. A new reading of consumer sentiment last Friday from the University of Michigan confirms that Americans' inflation expectations remain at their highest level since 1981, and continue to grow. The survey's chief economist, Richard Curtin, observed that inflation is the chief culprit in consumers' rising pessimism, with expectations of a 5.4% rise for the year ahead. Interestingly, stock traders are said to be pricing a rate of over 8.5% through the end of April, even before the Fed considers following through on suggestions of a 50 basis point rate hike at its May meeting. Now, inflation expectations 5 years out, often referred to as the 5-year break-even rate, also kept climbing this past week, hitting a record high at 3.6%. Phillips notes that some of this swell is related to the war in Ukraine, in addition to related to energy and commodity cost surges, but prices were rising well before Putin's late February invasion. Matt Phillips writes that economists follow inflation expectations because they often act as a self-fulfilling prophecy. That is, they matter because actual inflation depends in part on what we expect it to be. If everyone expects prices to rise, say, 3% over the next years, well, businesses will generally want to raise their prices by at least 3%. Similarly, workers and their unions will want pay raises of at least 3%. In other words, as David Wessel and Tyler Powell have found, if inflation expectations rise by 1 percentage point, actual inflation will tend to rise by 1 percentage point as well, thus fulfilling the prophecy. Curtin said strong growth will continue to put upward pressure on wages, resulting in higher income and stronger job prospects. This strength will then act to expand consumer demand and ultimately lead to another cycle of price and wage increases. Well, looking farther down the road, consumers' longer-term inflation expectations over a 10-year horizon are lower, but still at a record of 3.03%. Nowhere could a self-fulfilling prophecy have a bigger impact than on the already crazy housing market. Neil Irwin writes that the housing market this spring is looking like a head-on train wreck because of powerful forces crashing into each other. Interest rates on home mortgages have already spiked faster than they have in decades, reducing affordability, especially for first-time home buyers. Plus, builders can't get enough supplies to build houses more quickly. They can't finish them. Yet strong personal income growth and seemingly unstoppable demographic forces have been pushing high demand over the past year and a half. Irwin believes there's likely, you know, that likely will continue, that gap between supply and demand, making for a frustrating market for everyone involved. The rise in mortgage rates in recent weeks has confounded industry experts and is outside the range of any recent experience. You know, the rate was just 3.05% 3 months ago. That's 31% lower than just last week. But the numbers, well, they're already outdated. Based on mortgages locked in last Monday through Wednesday, by the end of last week, Mortgage News Daily's average came in at 4.95%. The speed and scale of, you know, rising mortgage rates mean that a family that can afford a $2,000 monthly mortgage could have borrowed $424,000 at the beginning of March, but only $375,000 at Friday's 4.95% rate. And that affordability factor gets worse the farther down you go on the household income scale. While it has raised its short-term Fed funds rate by a mere quarter point, long-term rates like mortgages are shaped by investor expectations of the future path of the economy and Fed policy. And as noted, you know, that's turned notably higher since December. The supply side of the market has its own troubles, as home builders have not been able to deliver enough houses to address pent-up demand, thus holding back sales and the sales volumes. KB Home CEO Jeff Mezger said just last week, our biggest challenge today is completing homes, not selling them. Wow. Among the materials in short supply, well, the steel ducts needed for HVAC systems, ovens, garage doors, windows, cabinets, and siding. Yeah, all integral parts of housing, I'd say. But more noteworthy, he said we expect shortages of this kind will stay with us throughout the rest of this year. So it's going to be a bumpy path as the housing market seeks a new balance. Rising mortgage rates will limit what buyers can offer, yet it's the high prices that incentivize suppliers to ramp up production. Meanwhile, homeowners with a low mortgage rate may be more reluctant to sell and give up the benefit of a rate that's below 3%, further hampering supply out there. Irwin argues that if the Fed's going to get inflation under control in the short term, it may still have to break or at least slow the expectation that prices are going to continue creeping steadily higher. And you know what that means. Hiking rates more quickly, higher than people have been expecting, with more and more traders now pricing in a minimum 50 basis point increase in May, maybe even higher, some going as far as 1 percentage point. A lot of investors won't love that. Thus, we may end up with less supply and transaction volume, making America's latest housing crisis even worse. Time we have for today's program. I'll return on Thursday. Butch will join Melody tomorrow, along with Wendy Wilson of Apothecary Herbs. I'm Dave Allen. Thanks, as always, to our producer, Todd, and to you, our loyal listeners, for tuning in to Financial Survival. Please be safe out there. See you next time. Bye-bye.